So I know hearing that can be kind of scary because you're like, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to make 7 days worth of content? The good news is that people don't necessarily need something extremely polished, you know, well-lit, you know, you looking beautiful. Really just hopping on your Instagram stories and talking to people, sharing a post on your Instagram stories from somebody else that you found really inspiring. Those two things can be really simple and can also help to keep your audience engaged and, you know, to make you feel like you are part of your Instagram rather than it just being, you know, a really beautifully, highly curated feed.
Oh, hi guys. That clip was from our knowledge dropping guest, my friend and coworker, Carlisle Russell. Carly, as I like to affectionately call her, is a social media manager with years of experience building the presence of major brands, specifically on Instagram. I've gone to her so many times in the past few weeks with tons of questions about how to optimize my online presence, and she's been able to give me really helpful feedback that I'm so excited to be sharing with you today. Whether you already have an established presence on social media, are just getting started, or in a transition phase, or simply want to get inspired, this is the perfect episode for you. Now, if we haven't met yet, hey, I'm Jules, an influencer marketing specialist and your host of this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I started this podcast with a mission to start a more transparent conversation between brands and content creators. If we can understand each other's goals, challenges, and needs, we will ultimately be able to work together so much more effectively. Since a brand's overall social media strategy has a lot to do with how they execute their influencer activations, having that be the first step of the collaboration conversation is key. And if you as a brand don't have the answer, Carly is the perfect person to break it all down for you. I spent an entire Sunday scheduling out posts for my Instagram using a scheduling tool called Later after this conversation. So, needless to say, I hope you walk away feeling as prepared and motivated as I did. Grab a pen or get ready to jot down some notes wherever you are because there's so much information here that will propel your digital brand forward. Thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and following along. Here we go. So, Carlisle, I'd love for you to start by introducing yourself to our audience and tell them a little bit about how you found your way into social media management.
Absolutely. So, I guess I'll start from the beginning. My path to working in social media has been very long and winding. I actually have went to college and got my degree in cinema, so I have a degree in like script writing and movie reviewing, and I have a little bit of a minor in marketing and management. So I went to college with the intention of wanting to be a screenwriter for episodic TV, something like Parks and Rec or 30 Rock or The Office. I love all of those shows, so I had the dream that I was going to be a scriptwriter for a show like that. And looking back, that would be a terrible job for me because my funny does not translate via words. So I'm glad I found myself in this marketing role for social media brand marketing. I feel like it's a much better fit for my personality because I do love numbers so much, and I feel that numbers have such a huge impact on social media. And so when I graduated, I worked at, do you know who Billy Mays is? The OxyClean guy?
I know who the OxyClean guy is.
Yeah, so I worked at that production studio fresh out of college. So like, Billy Mays here with OxyClean. I did those kinds of commercials, like 1-800 commercials. And my job while I was there was arranging the entire shoots. So I wasn't very valuable the day of, but beforehand I was telling people where to be and when and getting the food ready and finding the
talent. Oh my gosh, that's why you're so good at like all of our video shoots that we do here and why you're so organized in the call sheets.
I just have a little bit of practice.
That totally makes sense though.
Yeah, and while I was doing that, one of my jobs was after filming, I would work with the digital team and make sure that the story we created in the commercial matched up with what was going online for the website, on any sales pages, or if they had any social, that it was carried over there. And that's when I got interested in social. And so after that, I moved into like a content strategy role at another company and helped with writing blog posts and doing copywriting for ads and gathering content through video and photo, and eventually got promoted and was given their Instagram. And, you know, it was love at first post, I guess you could say.
So yeah, was it like overwhelming, or was it like, yes, I'm ready for this?
Oh my gosh, no, it was so overwhelming. The only like teaching moment I had before I was handed the entire account for this brand, like all 5 accounts, was, hey, this is the posting platform we use as a scheduler. This is how you use it. All right, here you go. Go for it. I didn't know anything about social media. I used Google so often, it's almost embarrassing.
No, like, thank you for using Google, because it is a real resource that people forget about sometimes.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, I kind of taught myself, and I learned through a lot of trial and error. And, you know, then I got my job here in Agent Nutrition last November, and I'll never leave.
Good. So. That's great. So you said that you didn't really have a ton of experience before, you just got handed this, but you made the most of it. What was your first step when you were like, oh, I don't know what to do, where did you go?
That is a great question. So I literally turned to Google, because the first question I found myself faced with personally when I started running, basically Instagram was what we focused on, and that's kind of what I focus on now. To this day, it's still the most powerful social media tool for brands. I think also for individuals as well, but it's a little bit different for each. The first thing, when I went to schedule my first post, I was like, oh my God, what time should I post this post? I have no idea. Should it be in the morning, in the evening, in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day? So I literally Googled, what time should I post on Instagram? And I just happened to stumble upon like this company called Sprout Social, which had a blog, which is full of fantastic resources. And they had an entire post that was like, hey, here's when you should post on Instagram based on all of this data. And that was like the first thing I ever figured out on my own.
What was the time?
Oh, I think this was in like 2015. So I think it was like at 2 p.m. or something that doesn't make any sense now. But
well, honestly, that was like one of the first things I was curious about too. Like, when am I going to get the most engagement? I don't have data for my own page yet, yeah, to go off of. Mm-hmm. So you kind of need that first initial, you know, suggestion.
Absolutely.
And then once you start getting data, you know, did it change after a while?
Mm-hmm. So as I, you know, got more into the groove of being a social media manager, I started noticing things like, oh, if I post at this time on this day, the post gets more likes or comments. I had no experience with data at that point. So I started paying attention to, okay, if I post in the evenings on most days, I'll get more engagement on my post through, like, I just knew that they were likes and comments, and that's what you wanted. So I kind of started paying attention to, okay, at nighttime I get more engagement, so I think I should continue to post at nighttime.
Makes sense. Yeah. Kind of like common sense.
Common sense there, you know?
It's good to have that validation. My next question was going to be, what skill sets or traits do you have that you feel like make you successful in this role? And I think you've already answered it a little bit, but I would love to hear about how your obsession with analytics and data mm-hmm. helps make you such a rock star social media manager.
Of course. So, to like, as a preface for this question, I am not a math person at all. Like, I got C's consistently in math,
yes,
from the time
queen.
That I was like in middle school through college. I never got an A in math at all. So saying now that I'm super into data and analytics kind of throws past me for a loop. I think that the skill set that I have that makes social media a little bit easier for me to undertake is being able to balance my left brain and my right brain. So making sure that I have the logic applied to the creative, because you want to be as creative as possible with social media. You want to push the boundaries. You're constantly wanting to test and try new things, but it's almost impossible to to just choose something to test. So being able to rely on past data and numbers to kind of create something that you know is going to be effective, but is still engaging to the audience because it is something they haven't seen before.
So within that, how do you stay organized? Because that's a lot of data to keep track of.
Yes.
That's a lot of information.
So for me, it really depends on who I'm doing social media for at that point in time and what the goals of that account are. So for example, if I'm working for a brand that wants to grow, then I'm obviously going to be paying attention to impressions, reach, and engagement rate. But if we're looking at somebody that's more concerned about, you know, making sales, then I'd focus on link clicks, conversions, and revenue. It really depends on what the goals are. But backing up from that a little bit, let's say that you're just starting out with social media. You want to grow a presence online, either for a brand or a person, and you're not sure where to start with data. I would recommend paying attention to impressions, obviously, because that shows how often a post or a piece of content is being distributed across the internet. I would pay attention to reach because that shows how many unique people are seeing a piece of content, which is really important. And then engagement rate, which kind of takes a little bit of all of those pieces and determines how interactive your content is. So how much it makes people want to like or comment or share it with somebody else or save it to their own account. Those sorts of things I think are really, really important. And the way that I keep track of those on a personal level is literally just through like a plug and play Excel spreadsheet, like the good old fashioned hard work kind of way where I can lay out all of the numbers one by one so I can see post by post, day by day, week by week, what's working, what's not working. And when I say working versus not working, I mean if I have a goal to, let's say we're launching a product, and so I'm creating an Instagram post to announce this new product that's really exciting, like let's say some sort of like beauty product. The goal for that is obviously letting people know that the product exists, right? That is the ultimate goal if you're launching a new product. So if you want people to know it exists, the numbers you should be looking at for your social post would be impressions and reach, right? Because you don't really care if people engage with it. You just want them to know that it exists. But let's say you have a different goal for the same product where you want people to ask any questions they have for that product. Obviously, then you would pay attention to impressions and engagement rate because it would show you out of all of these people that saw this post, this many decided to like, comment, share, save, etc. And then on the flip side of that, the third kind of thing is, let's say you want to sell a product. Obviously, from there, the numbers you would pay attention to would be conversions, link clicks, revenue. So it's kind of hard to answer that question in a one-off way because it really depends on what you want out of a social post at any given time. That was a lot of information. So
backing up a little bit, because let's just assume a lot of people listening are like me who are just kind of starting off promoting their brand on Instagram, or they're influencers who are either starting out or they're looking for ways to maybe optimize their processes. Yeah. So there's a lot that we can take away from what you just said. I think from the established perspective, you know, if you have an account, you have good growth, you're kind of looking to optimize, I think a great suggestion that you just mentioned is writing out your results essentially by engagements, like likes in one column, comments in one column, engagement rate, making sure you're tracking those over days and times. And can you use Instagram Insights to do some of that for you? Or
yes, absolutely. So if you are a person trying to grow your account, Instagram has done a really fantastic job of already providing the information that you need to know just by being able to look into your own insights. So what that kind of means is that you obviously need to have a business account on Instagram, which requires you connecting to Facebook. But once you've done that, you're pretty much in the open to kind of check out your analytics and see what's going on behind the scenes of every single Instagram post of your account as a whole. How are people interacting with you? So I think if you're looking into growing your following, something that's going to be really important is engagement, just bottom line. If you were going to look at one thing and focus on one thing to know how to drive people to your page, you should focus on engagement. When an account is first, you know, beginning on Instagram, it's kind of like if you were to create a new website on the internet. Nobody's going to know it's there unless you show them that it exists. So I think something that's really important from the beginning for any account is something I like to call community management. Basically, what that means is that you're interacting with your audience. And if you don't have an audience, what that means is that you seek out people that you would want to be part of your audience, and you then interact with their accounts to kind of say, hey, I exist, I'm here, I think you would be interested in what I have to offer. So looking at similar hashtags, just doing searches on Google to see if there are any accounts that pop up, looking at, you know, what your friends follow, what you follow, and seeing if there are any accounts that you can kind of interact with that way. And so that's the best way to grow an audience outside of just posting content, is actually getting on Instagram and using the tool as it was made to be used. So scrolling a feed, commenting on things, liking posts, looking through stories, DMing people. But taking that to the next level, I guess kind of the step two would then be focusing on, you know, the analytics that are behind the account and paying attention to engagement and engagement rate. Engagement rate is a little bit more complicated than just standard engagement, so I would even add that as like a step three, whereas engagements are just, okay, how much interaction is this post getting? Do I want more? Is this great? And kind of then adjusting what you're posting from that. So if you're enjoying the amount of engagements, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you would like to see posts get a little bit more comments or more likes, try something new. And that's the best way to kind of take that step too. Step three would then be like getting into the big boy, like playing games and posting, you know, numbers, data, analytics on a spreadsheet, you know, on a piece of paper, whatever works for you when it comes to tracking. That way you can kind of literally pinpoint and say, okay, this post had this many likes, this was the engagement rate, so this is how I know it would work for this. And then even a step up from that would be having a really beefy spreadsheet that has impressions, reach, post-by-post information, likes, comments, saves, shares, link clicks, you know, the whole nine. So I think there's like a good kind of four-step pace. And I would highly recommend that people not kind of try and force themselves into doing the whole big beefy, you know, spreadsheet smorgasbord full of numbers first, and really just kind of focus on the community to begin with, because community is what's going to, you know, help with that growth. People on Instagram see right through ads, you know, millennials specifically, which is, you know, what I am considered, can see through fakeness in like an instant when it comes to social media. And that's why a big keyword right now is authenticity for brands, because those super beautiful, polished feeds that people are used to seeing that are incredibly, you know, curated, maybe beautiful, but they're not getting as much interaction as accounts that are a little bit more real and maybe not perfectly posed or perfectly edited, and maybe not every single photo matches, because authenticity is becoming more and more important on Instagram, i.e. them talking about maybe hiding likes in the future and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, going back to what I said, the best thing anyone can do to grow an Instagram account is to really be involved in talking with the community you're trying to establish.
One thing that I've started to do with mine is, well, first of all, I read later all the time, and they give amazing hacks on Instagram. So as far as hashtags or you know, using the suggested tool on Instagram, obviously having a business profile to kind of track those metrics. Absolutely. Right out of the gate, what are some things that a very, very small, like 200 follower brand can do to, like you said, engage with their community, find those people? Because I think that is also the hardest part.
Yeah, absolutely. So Instagram has done an amazing job at actually kind of giving us this answer without us even having to look for it. So they have this section called the Explore section, which kind of, based on how your account is curated, suggest content that you may be interested in. So the first thing I would recommend anybody doing is hopping on Instagram and thinking of, you know, your favorite brands that you like to follow, that you're interested in, your favorite celebrities that you like to follow or that you're interested in, or that may be related to the page that you're trying to create, and give them a follow, number one, because that can help kind of more finitely curate your explore page. From there, hop on your explore page and see what's popping up. Are there things popping up that you don't necessarily think relate? Like if you're an influencer that's trying to create an account about beauty, right? Then, you know, things like science hacks or like video tips or, you know, recipes may not be exactly what is going to relate the most to the page you're trying to grow. So I would hop on the explore page and kind of search things that relate very vaguely to your account. So if you're the same beauty influencer that's trying to grow a following, look up hashtag beauty and see what's popping up there. Like a couple of photos that you actually do like, maybe comment on something, give that hashtag a follow. Next, maybe do makeup or do skincare routine. And, you know, find those hashtags that are super, super related to what you're trying to do. I would suggest looking for 5 to 10 of them. Give those hashtags a follow. And every single day, I would spend 10, 20, maybe even 30 minutes scrolling through those hashtags, scrolling through the feed you've curated, and actually interacting with it. So not just looking and seeking and finding new things all the time, but actually interacting with the people you're trying to grow. Another thing you could do is look at location. So let's say you're a beauty influencer based in Nashville that's trying to grow a following. Follow a ton of pages related to that location that you're at, so you can kind of get involved with your local community, which can definitely help grow things. So I think using the explore page and really, you know, using Instagram to the advantage that it's been created for, which is finding people that are like-minded through hashtags, through the explore page, can be a really, really great way for a smaller account to kind of help boost their following over time.
How many hours a day do you recommend spending doing that every day?
So if you're really trying to grow your page and like you want it really bad, 30 minutes to an hour would be the perfect amount of time. So like brand new accounts, I would say with 500 followers or less, 10, 15 minutes is probably going to be enough time. But if you have 500 or more followers, like let's say 500 to 2,500, you should be spending a solid 30 minutes to an hour every single day doing this community management if you really want to see, you know, results from the time you're putting in. So that follower number increasing, engagement increasing, etc.
Sweet. And how long do you think it could take someone, let's say one person who's on the super fast track is really great at engaging with their community, mm-hmm. seeking out people who are like-minded, and then someone who has a full-time job and maybe is doing this on the side, how fast do you think that they could hit that 10K mark?
So that is a great question. So I think somebody who like full-time dedicated to growing this Instagram, they could probably hit 10K. I say conservatively within 3 months. So like just constantly at the grindstone, doing a ton of community management, cranking out new content every single day, posting on their feed, posting on stories, interacting with other people. I think if you're doing that for an hour a day, you can hit 10K in about 3 months. For somebody that has a full-time job and you're starting an Instagram from scratch and you're spending maybe 15 to 30 minutes 4 or 5 days a week, I would give yourself like 8 to 12 months to hit that 10,000 mark. But you also have to be really graceful with yourself and understand that follower count does not equate to quality of content ever. Follower count is just, you know, it is kind of a popularity contest. It's an instant reaction. So if you're not seeing the results that you want through your follower account, that does not mean that you're not putting out good content. And I want to make that very blanket statement clear, is that content quality does not equate to follower numbers. It's really that community piece that can really help showcase why your follower number is valuable. follower numbers a little bit, edgy.
We just hit a nerve. I appreciate that, though, because sometimes it's very easy to fall into the trap of needing to be validated by Instagram.
Yes.
And you can pour your heart and soul into something. I am so guilty of posting something, and if it doesn't get a like in 10 minutes, I delete it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so guilty of that just because I want that validation right away to know something's resonating.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that has to do with I don't have enough data, and I'm not so specific with my audience yet that I feel confident. So I really need that validation. Mm-hmm. So that was an important one for me to hear. I'm glad that you hit on content.
Yes.
Because I want to ask, how many times a day do you want to post on your Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
And that includes stories and feed.
So I think that also kind of depends on the bandwidth that the person has. So going back to the example you said of somebody that's like doing Instagram on the side, like as a side hustle or like a part-time kind of fun thing, and they have a full-time job, I think that person, really, you should be posting on your feed 5 times a week, and on stories maybe 3 or 4 times a week. That would be perfect. That's enough content to kind of keep you relevant on the Instagram feed while also giving your audience relevant content to consume. If you're a person that is doing Instagram full time and we're like gung-ho like we just talked about, on average you should be posting about once every 15 hours. So for most people, what this breaks down to is 5 days a week you post one time and 2 days a week you post twice. Obviously, those time slots will depend on when you get the most engagement, when your audience is online, etc. But really, 7 days a week you should be posting on your feed, and 5 to 7 days a week you should be posting on your stories. So I know hearing that can be kind of scary because you're like, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to make 7 days worth of content? The good news is that people don't necessarily need something extremely polished, well lit, you looking beautiful. Really just hopping on your Instagram stories and talking to people, sharing a post on your Instagram stories from somebody else that you found really inspiring. Those two things can be really simple and can also help to keep your audience engaged and, to make you feel like you are part of your Instagram rather than it just being, a really beautifully, highly curated feed.
That's really great advice for someone who is doing that on the side and may need some help with, staying relevant, like you said, on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have a lot of time. Make sure to share a post. Plus, that's another way to engage with the accounts that you enjoy following, that you have similar themes with, and et cetera, et cetera. So let's go back to a day in the life of Carlisle. So when you come into work, what are some of the things that can happen throughout your day?
Yeah.
What do you prioritize? How do you manage your time? Maybe a week in the life of Carlisle would be a little bit more well-rounded.
Yeah, absolutely. So 50% of my time at work is dedicated to scheduling social posts. Granted, I do run 10 social accounts, which is not what most people are going to be doing. So if you're not running 10 social accounts, you shouldn't be dedicating 20 to 25 hours of scheduling social media. That's just kind of crazy. But if you are running a social media account for a brand or a couple of brands, or you work at an agency, or you're trying to grow your own social following through your own social accounts, I think 20 hours a week scheduling posts is pretty on par for most social media managers. So what this consists of is content that's already been generated and curated actually being plugged into the different social accounts that it's going to go on to. So let's say you're an influencer and you're running an Instagram account. It should really only take you about an hour to 2 hours per week posting out your social content. So that's choosing the photo or the video you want to post, writing out a caption, and actually publishing it. So you can either do this live and not schedule it out, or you can use a scheduling tool like Later or Sprout Social or Hootsuite or Hopper, etc., to kind of schedule out your posts for the week. Unless you're me and doing this full time, I don't think it's going to, take the 20 hours. But the other 20 to 25 hours of my week are dedicated to, you know, scraping social analytics. So seeing how our posts have performed over the past week, what successes we had, what things we could push to work on for maybe next week, and kind of reflecting on how our content has been valued by our audience. Second to that is content planning and content curation, right? So actually brainstorming different types of content we can put on social based on what has worked well for our audience in the past, but also, you know, pulling new ideas out of thin air. And then also, you know, actually getting the content. So photo shoots or video shoots, or, you know, walking around the office and capturing boomerangs, or really most of my week is dedicated to just making sure that our social accounts are as on point for our audience as they can be.
What happens when something goes wrong? Like, what happens when a post doesn't post that wasn't supposed to because the scheduling tool messed up?
Yeah.
Or you have a misspelled caption, or, you know, just something fails in your grand plan.
So step one is take a deep breath, because everything's going to be okay. Nothing, the world's not going to collapse. The good news with social is that every single day can be seen as a test day, right? So it's not like a website where it takes months to develop this thing out, right? Every single social post, every single day can be considered its own test, even for very, very small accounts. So just understand, like, hey, this test went a little wrong, but let's see how this affects the audience. So if there's a misspelled caption, like, just hop in, edit it, and fix it. No big deal. If a post doesn't post on time, post it at the next best time that you can, and don't freak out over it. It's going to be okay. Another thing is to remember that social media should be fun. It should make you feel connected to people. It should make you feel like you're sharing information, but you're also receiving information and things you didn't know. So remember to keep that fun, excited part of it in your everyday life when it comes to social. And if you're not feeling that, then maybe, like, use a day that's gone haywire to, like, take a break and step away from it and kind of reevaluate and feel where you're at with your social account. Because if it's, like, stressing you out to the point where if something goes wrong, it kind of throws you off completely, maybe that's not the best way you could be using your time.
100%.
I say it on an Instagram podcast, but...
No, that's, you know what? I think you're speaking... That's exactly what this audience needs to hear. Because you, me, and everyone listening probably spends way too much time on Instagram and on social media. And a huge part of that is affecting our mental health as a society, hence why Instagram is playing around with hiding likes. So we'll go right into that. What are some ways that you stay fresh on Instagram? And by that I mean avoid burnout or, you know, stimulation or idea overload, because that happens to all of us.
Absolutely. So it's super tough being a millennial that's like a social media manager by day, because I find that I don't dedicate time to my own social media outside of work. So if you look at my Instagram, you'll see that I post maybe one time a month, and really the only thing I ever share on stories are like cute posts that I see, or if I do something at work that I want people to see, or, you know, maybe I'll be like out with my friends and post a picture. But I think that's because I do spend so much time in the day-to-day and the weeds of my 9-to-5 doing Instagram. And so I know that there are a lot of people who have 9-to-5 jobs and then do Instagram on the side. So the first thing I want to say is, like, kudos to you. That is hard, and, like, you deserve all the credit in the world. Specifically, I'm speaking to you, Julia.
Whatever.
But the best way to avoid just like that stress and that kind of pressure we can put on ourselves to make sure we're doing everything we can to make our Instagram perfect is to literally take a break and step away from it, which can be really, really scary and overwhelming, especially if you're trying to use Instagram as like a tool to generate income for yourself, if it's your main source of income or a side source of income, or if, you know, you're trying to spread the message of yourself, of another brand. So really just taking a breath and stepping back is key, because the world is not going to end if you don't post on Instagram for one day. your following is not going to unfollow you if there's one day where you don't post on Instagram. So I think really focusing on how you're feeling is going to help reflect the positivity, the message you're trying to share through your Instagram account. Because if you're stressed and you're forcing a piece of content out, it's going to translate to your audience. Because like I said before, millennials, my generation, people that are younger than me, and even people that are older than me can sense that like false, fake force of, you know, content into the world. So don't force anything. Take a step back. Let your mind breathe. Let yourself breathe. And if you do that, then the ideas will come naturally, right? You'll be spending time through your day and something will just like hit you while you're eating breakfast. You know, write it down, create a note file in your phone that's just ideas for Instagram, and like write it down and don't feel like you have to do it right at that point in time. And so that way, if you are stressed, you can look at your notepad and see like, okay, I've had this idea, I'll try and create something like this. You have a stockpile, or, you know, if you are just trying to shoot content, you don't have any sort of burnout, you do still have the stockpile to look back on. And having that notepad, or, you know, the actual physical note that you write down, or the notes in your phone, can keep you from feeling the pressure of like, oh, I have to do this right now or else I'll forget about it and it'll never get done. Mm-hmm. So I think that's my tip for kind of alleviating the fear of like creativity burnout, and also being scared of like letting your Instagram be quiet for a little while.
What are the specifics of what you personally do when you need a break from social media?
So when I need a break from social media, the number one thing I like to do is to go outside and take a walk. Leave my phone at my desk so there's like no technology around me, and then I'll go outside for like 20 minutes, look at the sky, you know, be aware of the fresh air, and kind of just take that in. If I need to be creative, then I like to do what a lot of people like wouldn't expect, but if I like to be creative, I need to shut myself off like completely to let my mind rest. I'm such an introvert. I am such a 4 on the Enneagram. I like cannot have any social interaction happening if I want to have any sort of creativity. So I'll like, I call them my burrito days. I'll like lock myself away for a day, curl up in a blanket, like watch mindless TV, and literally just let my body and my mind turn off. And then I find that after that, if I do that for a day, then automatically my entire life is a lot more like bright and creative. I'm like, oh, okay, I've gotten my rest. Like I can be social again, literally and like online. So.
Totally get it. So you mentioned earlier how important community management is. I'd like for you to go into some general ground rules when it comes to community management.
Yeah.
And along with that, speaking in a brand voice, mm-hmm. and how to make sure that you are portraying the brand correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. So having a brand voice established, even if you're not running a brand's Instagram account, I think is incredibly important. So if you are a content creator or an influencer that has a social following or is trying to grow a social following, it's really important to speak to people consistently. So before you even like try and push your Instagram to grow, you should figure out how you want to talk to people. And of course that's gonna develop over time and you're gonna get more comfortable with it. But kind of sit down with yourself, put 15 minutes on your phone timer and write down how you want to talk to your audience. You know, really simple things like, do you want to speak more casually or do you want to be more like educational and have a more professional tone? Those are two great things to kind of determine how you're going to talk to people. So if you're more casual, you can use slang. You can be like a little bit more free-flowing with emojis, you know, just generally, you know, maybe throw in some cuss words, you know, you're a little edgy. It really kind of depends on what you're trying to accomplish. But if you're doing the more professional kind of vibe for your tone, I would recommend, you know, using larger vocabulary words, trying not to talk so casually, completely avoiding like slang and things of that nature. And determine on this notepad or on your phone or whatever it is you want to, how you're going to talk to people. And then from there, keep those loose guidelines and kind of start crafting out captions. You know, do some draft captions that don't have any photos attached to them. It's literally just you writing. And so you can look back on that if you ever kind of forget what you want your tone to be. You have those captions that are written out, and then you can draw on that. And so then when you're talking with your audience, you also want that tone to be reflected. So if you're, you know, commenting on a post, you want the tone in which you comment on that post to match up what you're posting on your feed. That way people know it's you when they even just like read a comment. They can say, oh yeah, you know, that's Jules, that's the Added Value Podcast, and I know that because it's like fun and cheeky, but also like really hip and cute.
Kind of. Oh, hey, you think I'm hip and cute? That's awesome. Mission accomplished. Hanging up my hat, I've already won. That's super cool. So that in itself, I mean, how do I know, or how do you turn off your brain and speak as someone else?
Wow. So I'm really lucky with the job that I came into because the brand voices have already been established. So for me, like learning to speak in that new brand voice for these social accounts really just equated to like reading some blog posts and watching some videos and understanding how, you know, the person I'm posting for as well as the brand that I'm posting for already communicates to their audience. And from there, you know, I also leverage the goals for the person and the brand over time. So I can say, okay, we're here and we want to get to this point. So I can meet those goals in the middle with the tone that I use. But my job's been really easy. You know, Dr. Axe and Ancient Nutrition were already established before I came along. So I just kind of read what was already out there and adapted it to my personal style. And that adaptation piece is really kind of tough to explain, but the best way I can, you know, verbally explain that to someone is like, think about how you would imitate the way that one of your friends talks and then like do that through social media.
Do you recommend writing out like sample responses to questions?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you are growing an Instagram account and you're growing a following, you'll start to notice that more and more people ask questions based on the content that you put out. So if you are an influencer, we'll go back to the same example I gave earlier. If you're a beauty influencer, you'll notice that people may start asking about your skincare routine or what your favorite makeups are, or, you know, how you handle frizzy hair when it's rainy outside, or any number of things. So if you start seeing a question appear more and more often, I highly recommend just kind of like, you know, using your phone, you're on social media, open up a note and then write out those questions that you get a lot of times. Create a really quick sample answer right there, type it out. So if you get those questions in the future, you can just hop over to that notepad, copy the answer to the question, paste it out in social media, and you don't have to spend the time typing out those answers every single day.
Great time saver.
It is.
So this is kind of a controversial thing. Not really, but I see different brands have different ways of handling negative feedback.
Yes.
And maybe if someone tags you in a post, maybe people listening don't know, if you're a business, you can hide posts that you're tagged in. Mm-hmm. So how do you know whether something's worth responding to, whether it's worth hiding? Mm-hmm. How do you go about that?
Another great question. So that one's a little bit different, I think, for brands and for people. So I'm going to go ahead and draw a hard line there, and I'll talk about each of those separately. So for brands, I highly, highly recommend leaving any negative feedback public. So don't delete it. Don't cower from it. You know, if somebody has an issue or if they have a question that has kind of a little bit of a negative connotation to it, that gives you the perfect opportunity to address the situation and spin it to make it positive. So for example, let's say you're a brand and you're selling a product and somebody comments and says, hey, I ordered this product a month ago and it still hasn't come in. What's the deal? That's a great time for you as a brand to hop on and respond and say, hey, thank you so much for reaching out. I'd love to help you out in this situation. Do you mind sending us a DM so we can assist you further? So then what that happens is that takes a negative experience a customer's had, shows the audience that can see those comments that you're interested in helping out any customer that's having an issue, and then directing it to DM, obviously, you know, saves the privacy of the customer so they don't have their email address or phone number or address on a public comment on a brand post. So I think that's a great way to handle negativity as a brand. Obviously, if somebody is, you know, spreading really, really inflammatory lies or claims about your company, or is kind of just generally being really negative, you know, using cuss words, spamming, trying to sell their own products, I don't really have an issue with people deleting those comments. But if there's a customer that's had a bad experience, you definitely, definitely want to address that. Switching over to the other side, if you're a person, I think the philosophy is a little bit different. Obviously, if somebody's asking you a question, I think you should answer it. But if somebody is spamming a post, making really negative claims, saying really mean things about an individual, kind of like those bullying kind of comments, absolutely, if you're a person, feel free to delete those and don't address them. In fact, a lot of times if you're an individual and somebody's like leaving really mean, rude, negative comments, they want you to react in a kind of inflammatory way. So kind of just either ignoring the comment completely or deleting it, I think, is the best case scenario for an individual. So I think that's the two big differences for Instagram accounts.
Totally. I'm with you. So I heard on the Gold Digger podcast, Jenna Kutcher, she's, mm-hmm. you know, a huge multi-million dollar podcaster, influencer, yes. et cetera. She says that she spends about 30 minutes after a post goes live commenting and replying. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that there is a time sensitivity to when you post something to making sure you're engaging back with your audience and replying to their questions?
Yes, absolutely. So specifically for the accounts that I run, with just like Jenna says, within the first 30 minutes to an hour, depending on how viral the post goes, we do sit and respond to comments as they're coming in, like live right there. But after about the first hour, we stop responding immediately. And then once a day or so, we'll check in for 7 days that the post is live. Because, you know, posts are showing up in the Explore feed, on people's feeds that are following you for up to 5 or 7 days at a time. Sometimes more if it's really viral, or if you, you know, push it as an ad, etc. So that's why I recommend keeping an eye on posts for up to 7 days. Even if comments aren't coming in heavily, that can help keep you engaging your audience and help keep the post live for longer, which you definitely want, because that increases impressions and reach and engagement and all that good stuff we like to hear. So I definitely think the first 30 to an hour are critical, and then after that, just keeping an eye on it maybe once or twice a day for a week is perfect.
Then you file it away in the archives.
Absolutely.
You're done with it.
Done with it. Let it go.
So that brings me to another question. So how long after you put up a post do you collect data on it? Like, how long do you let it live and breathe and get engagements before you write down the numbers on how it performed?
So for me, I like to look at my numbers bi-weekly and also monthly. So granted, posts can live forever and ever, but for me, I like to see how they perform 2 weeks out and then 30 days out. And I think that gives a really good even gauge for every piece of content you're putting out, because you can say, hey, okay, in 2 weeks, this post gave me this set of data, whereas in a month, it gave me this set of data, and that's how it stacks up against these other pieces of content that I have going out as well.
Do you feel like that there is a discrepancy between 2 weeks and a month in posts? Like, do you see significant growth between them in that period of time?
Sometimes, and other times not at all. So there are definitely posts that tend to go a little bit more viral. And when I say viral, it just means, you know, longevity, engagement, etc. Like, how big did this post get and how fast did it get that big? So usually videos will have a really, like, a lot longer of longevity than like photos or GIFs or boomerangs. You know, stories really only live for 24 hours, so that 2 week to 30 day comparison isn't going to change much. But if you have a video on IGTV that also pushes to the feed, the 2 week and 30 days can be pretty significantly different.
Just to give our audience an idea, you know, and our team is relatively small, and yes, we manage two very big accounts. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking for brands around, like, how many people do you need to manage a certain amount of followers, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. So I think that's a little bit harder to answer because I think it really depends on the person, right? So if you are a very, very creative person and your bread and butter is like making content for Instagram, like you love filming videos, you love shooting photos, you're all about creating captions, but like the numbers don't really work for you, then I think a team of two would be perfect, right? Somebody that can do the content development and curation, and then somebody else that can do the deployment and then, you know, revisiting it, the numbers. For our team, you know, we have 10 social accounts that we manage with a total of around 10 million followers for all of them, which is a lot of people. We have two people that work on our team. Let me say that I just lied to you when I say two people work on our team, when it's actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people that work on our team. So I handle strategy. We have 4 people that help us out with content development, and then one person that does community management, aka responding to DMs, comments, questions, etc. But again, you know, we do work for a brand. We have 10 social accounts. That's a lot more than the standard person is, you know, looking at.
But that's still not a lot of people when you think
about it. Yeah, it's not a lot of people at all.
You know, one thing that I am constantly thinking about is, you know, an influencer marketing specialist. When I see a lot of influencers with managers, mm-hmm. Who have, you know, which I totally understand bringing someone on to negotiate your terms and absolutely. To do the money part and everything like that. But I just want to throw this out there that it is 100% my recommendation that if you are an influencer, you are the one personally interacting with the brands as much as humanly possible.
Yes.
Especially when it's your brand, I think keeping it close to the vest mm-hmm. is insanely, insanely important. And managing your brand voice is something that only you can do. Managing the relationships you have. Your agent can't create relationships with your brands. And one thing that I struggle with all the time is when there are influencers I work with and I work with their agents who are almost deterring me from working with you. Mm-hmm. But then when you and I talk in the DMs, you're an angel and I'm obsessed with you and I want to keep working with you forever. But do I want to go through the, you know, an organization, the not timely responses, the, you know, just even the verbiage of what your agent is going to say to me and how they're going to say it is so much different than when I talk with you directly. So sidebar kind of, but I had to throw that out.
Of
like,
course.
You try to take on as much as you personally can to build those relationships mm-hmm. When it comes to your Instagram and your account. And then, you know, if you want to bring someone on to help with your negotiating your invoices and things like that, by all means. But
something I would also love to add is the company I work for now, Ancient Nutrition / Dr. Axe, is very, very different from my past jobs. You know, my past jobs as a social media manager, I've been at 2 other companies doing what I do now, and I was the only person doing social media for both of those companies. So I'm very spoiled now with my team of like 4 to 6. Before, I was doing strategy, content creation, content distribution, and the numbers all on my own. Granted, they were just 5 social accounts for each, but that's still, you can get a lot done on your own if you just know how to make content stretch.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I was listening to Julie Solomon from the Influencer Podcast, and she has essentially stopped posting on social media on the feed. Mm-hmm. She only shows up in stories, and she said that her engagement rate has gone up. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a lot of peace of mind, knowing that I don't always have to be posting to the feed. There's something in me, maybe just from back in 2013 when Instagram started, that makes me feel like I have to post on my feed every single day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the algorithm works in great ways, and the algorithm helps us by allowing those stories to kind of count as us being active on the platform, which is what Instagram wants.
Absolutely.
So it's not all dark days, and it's not all overwhelming content that you just feel like you have to crank out.
Not at all. Social media should be fun. If it's not fun, then you should take a break, man.
Speaking of, what do you think the most challenging part of your job is?
Ooh, I think the most challenging part of my job is thinking of what to do next. which can be really daunting and also kind of crippling, especially if you don't have any experience creating content at all, which is kind of how I started. You know, when I first began, all I did was like repost photos that users of the brand that I was at the time had posted. And, you know, now I'm filming videos 3 or 4 times a week, and we have quarterly photo shoots, and then we also do tiny little photo shoots. So the hardest thing is making sure that the content we're generating is relevant, that it's interesting, and that it's also engaging. Because, you know, something I like to say to a lot of people is, what's the point of posting something beautiful if it doesn't resonate with anybody else? Granted, you know, definitely want to give props to yourself. Definitely want to say that, like, if you love something, and if you love your Instagram account and you have no followers and you don't care, then, like, keep posting your beautiful content, because follower numbers does not equate to how important you are as a person. Just going to say that again. But, you know, if you are wanting to grow your following and you see that you're posting things that people aren't interacting with, then, you know, maybe try and adjust what it is that you're posting. If you really like posting photos of your dog, but nobody's liking it, I don't know why they're not liking it, because I would like it. But if they're not liking it and you want to grow your following, then you need to try something new.
I totally agree with that. Sometimes the best way to get out of a rut is to kind of shake yourself out of it.
Absolutely.
By going a different direction, which I think that's something also that people who maybe are further along in their careers could benefit from hearing.
Yeah.
Is, you know, if they are reaching a plateau, try to go into yourself and think about what you care about. And if mm-hmm. you haven't shared something like that, go out on a limb and see how your audience responds. Because chances are, if they're following you because they love who you are, they're going to care about what you have to say and what you care about.
I don't think you should be afraid to take inspiration from the world around you either. Like, if you see somebody that posts a video and they're like, hey, here's this cute dress and here's 4 ways that I'm going to style this, and like, think about how you can adapt that to what you're doing. Like, if you're a beauty influencer, like we've been talking about this whole time that I've made up this person that's on this journey with us. If you're this beauty influencer and you see a video like that, then think about how you could apply that to what you do. Like, oh, here's, you know, this favorite mask of mine. Here's 4 ways you can use it. Or here's 2 ways I like to use it. Or, you know, kind of taking inspiration from the world around you, but don't copy people's content.
That's rude.
I'll get salty about that.
Has that ever happened to you, Carlisle?
That has happened to me. It actually just happened to Ancient Nutrition this past week. Another competing brand posted a photo that's almost an exact copy of something we posted a month ago. And, you know, inner me is like, I have this whole dialogue where I'm like telling the social media manager off and like talking to them about how much better I am at my job than they are. But when it comes down to it, like, everybody, you know, takes inspiration from other people all the time. And I think it's just like, you know, have grace, be flattered if you find that somebody's copying your content, because that means that something you're doing is working.
Do your due diligence. Make sure to tag people if you repost their photos.
Like, absolutely.
Honestly, that's the easiest thing in the world to do. So be a good human if you're going to copy someone's post or reshare it. As long as you give them credit, mm-hmm. like, it's Gucci.
Yes.
So speaking of which, who is your favorite person to follow on Instagram right now? Like, who do you stalk every day?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. Okay, so I guess
she stalks a lot of people.
Instagram is my full-time job, so
that's where we live.
It's where we live. Everybody on here gets it. So I have a couple that I'm obsessed with right now. First and foremost, actually, 2 of the influencers that you've introduced me to and that Bailey's introduced me to, our boss. I love Jessie Sarah. When I mentioned the 4 dress thing, she actually posted that video earlier today.
I just watched it, literally,
and I was like, genius! You're fantastic! So I love Jessie Sarah. Also, Allie Bonar. Not sure how to say your last name. Avo Queen. She's fantastic.
We only refer to people as their Instagram handles here.
Yes.
So don't worry, it's fine.
If I know who you are by your Instagram handle, please don't take it as, like, anything shady when I don't know how to say your name, because it's
nothing
personal.
It's the world we live in. It's the new reality.
I also have been loving Allbirds as a brand account. I think everything they're doing is fantastic. And I've also been really, really into Real Simple's Instagram account, which is funny, but they posted this video the other day. This is that's just like how to zest a lemon, and I
how to zest a lemon,
and for some reason that resonated so deeply with me. It's like, wow, how simple. It's real simple. Like, yes.
So on brand.
So on brand.
Wow. It must make you feel so good. The synergy there.
Yes.
It's just.
I nerd out over this. I think I was actually at dinner with my friends and I was like, look at this content. And they're like looking at me like, why does this matter? And I'm like, where's my social media?
It's like the trifecta. It's like, that's all you want in life.
I just love good, relevant content. Just love it.
Side note, you know, the whole social squad at our office, we have a group on Instagram that we DM all the time inspiration to.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely recommend if you're on a team where you can all collaborate,
mm-hmm.
you know, do that. Share posts.
Posts?
We're at the end of our days here. Like, speaking is ceasing to exist. Share posts and ideas and inspiration. I mean, that is part of the process, right? That's part of the creative process, is getting ideas from other people, adapting it to, you know, your message and your voice, like Carla was saying. And if you're lucky enough to work with a creative team like we have, mm-hmm. who can really bring that to life, that's super important as well.
And if you don't have a team, you know, get some of your best friends together or find some like-minded individuals and create a group and then share it that way, because you know, Instagram gives us this incredible power to connect with people who are just like us and who think like us and who want the same things as us. So find those people, surround yourself with them, and then create an Instagram DM group and send each other stuff.
That's so true. We do, you know, the con to Instagram knowing what you like is that you never see anything different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think for me personally, getting on a different app completely, like Pinterest,
mm-hmm.
can totally open your mind to something that you love. It's not just what you see all day, every day, and then everything is a copy of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, you know, wait, okay, yeah, I see that everywhere, so I like it, but is that really my style? Is that really what I like?
Yeah.
So instead of letting Instagram tell you what you like and what you want to see, make sure you're still always getting outside of your comfort zone and having experiences, mm-hmm. and searching for inspiration in other places.
Yeah, Twitter's my guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
I go to Twitter when Instagram's bummed me out or if I'm over it.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think is like the app underdog that is completely underrated but people need to start paying attention to?
Honestly, I think, oh my gosh, so many people are going to yell at me about this, I think. But I really do think it's Twitter. I think Twitter is so underrated, and I think it's kind of going through a revival. Every single brand I've ever worked for, and I know this isn't going to matter for everybody, but Twitter always has the highest conversion rate. So that means that people that are clicking on your links are going to be the most likely to actually buy the product. So you have a very engaged audience on Twitter. But I find that reaching the audience on Twitter that does engage with stuff is super, super hard, because people are over-following people on Twitter that they don't know. You have to be funny, like Wendy's, or like really intriguing and edgy, like Now This, that shares videos. It's really hard to like be a person and grow a huge following on Twitter unless you're just insanely funny and good at making up memes.
For sure.
Which I'm not, but that's why it's my favorite to go to, because I love to have like a little laugh or a little chuckle, and sometimes Instagram is too inspirational and I want like dirty jokes.
Yeah.
So.
No, I definitely feel that. I feel that way about Pinterest. I know I just mm-hmm. mentioned it, but especially for more of the influencer creative side of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we don't realize, because it's just, and I say this in quotes, a board and
mm-hmm.
a Pinterest. You don't have people commenting on your posts. It's really hard to understand unless you care and look into the analytics, like
mm-hmm.
how people are interacting with the content you're putting out there.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just repurposing. Like
mm-hmm.
if you're already posting your outfit and what you're wearing or your recipes of what you're making on Instagram, you can repurpose that and reach a whole new audience on Pinterest. So
mm-hmm.
for me, I think that's super underrated. And then I was just reading that Gary Vee thinks everyone should go all in on TikTok.
I have heard that too, yeah.
So I haven't braved the wilderness. I'm not one of those early adapters to apps. I'm just not. I accept that about myself. But yes, I've heard that that's the next frontier. I've heard that Instagram is where Facebook was in 2013,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we'll see what happens there. Facebook is still dominating everything.
Yeah. Also, I don't think people should sleep on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because you know, most of YouTube's audience is under 12 years old right now. But, I mean, I'm thinking back to where I was when I was 12 years old and I was using MySpace and, like, LiveJournal. And I will tell you, right now, if MySpace was still around, you bet I would be updating my profile song after this podcast interview. Like, so YouTube is probably not going to go anywhere because it's a Google company and Google's not going anywhere, which means that the current YouTube audience, which is 12 and under, is likely going to grow with YouTube. And so if you want that super engaged audience, you need to start hopping on YouTube now so you can kind of start introducing those early adapters to other types of content.
Yeah, and Instagram is really pushing video now. I know IGTV is a big focus of ours and a lot of other brands. Mm-hmm. So I think video is the next thing.
For sure.
Maybe I'll start interviewing my podcasts and actually, like, have to look cute for them.
Ew.
Just so I can post it on YouTube. Ew, she says.
Well, considering I'm in literally a grout fit of gray yoga pants and a gray sweatshirt today.
It fits the mood.
That's fair.
So, anything else that you want to share about your experience in social media? Any takeaways that you've learned? Any advice you want to give to someone who maybe wants your job or, you know, wants to be where you are now in a few years?
Yeah. I think that the most important thing to remember if you're in a career doing social media, if you want to be in a career doing social media, or if you're just doing social media for fun, is that you need to have a lot of grace with yourself because you're not going to post the best post of all time every single day. And you shouldn't put that pressure on yourself because it's only going to lead to, you know, fear and kind of paralyzation of content creation and posting. So just be really, really graceful. Don't be afraid to try new things. Don't be afraid to push your boundaries. And don't be too scared to look into the numbers.
Really solid advice.
Thank you.
Where can people find you?
Oh, so you can find me on Instagram at Carlisle Nicole. That's CarlisleNicholE. I also have a website that's www.carlislenicole.com. If you ever have any questions about social media or you don't know how to do something, you can always DM me. I'm definitely more than happy to help. And then also Later has a really great Instagram resource and so does Sprout Social.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to my chat. I hope you guys got a lot of this conversation. It's a blast hanging out with you, Carlisle, as always.
Thanks so much. Let's
do it again tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
Well, there it is. A lot of Google searching and a little bit of a go for it mentality is all you need to be a super successful social media manager, just like Carlisle. And now that you're basically an Instagram pro, I have a homework assignment for you. If you learned anything from this episode, go ahead and share it on your Instagram stories, tag Added Value Podcast, and let me know one of your takeaways from this episode. I want to give you a shout out. I want to give you props for taking time to learn something new and to make yourself better. That is badass, and I'm proud of you. Now, go use what you've learned to chase your dreams and make the world a better place. See you next time.